And first, I wanted to thank you for being on the show on Sunday night. We've really gotten a good response to it so far, so thanks so much for that.
Yeah, no, thank you.
And I know, you know, I felt like we didn't have enough time for you, and we also didn't have enough time for all of our questions. So I wanted to come in today and ask some of the questions that had come up, especially the ones that we had harvested from that wonderful Lo Cien luncheon the other day about housing in Sonoma County.
Right. No, it's so true. I mean, every day in the seems like as you follow the news, there's an article or a story on the radio about the housing crisis in the Bay Area and who it's affecting and how it's negatively affecting families, quality of life, commutes that are getting longer and more onerous. It's a huge issue, and it's elevated, I think, to the top of folks' level of we need to do something. And that was, again, going back to what CASA, which is now really over because it was really this ad hoc group, public-private partnership, as it were, all these different people getting together to kind of, what would we do different in housing and how can we make a difference? Because status quo is not working. We know that.
All right, I'm going to get to a couple of these specific questions in just a second, but I saw just yesterday that some of the key elements of CASA are now rolled into a bill in Sacramento, the one about building more densely near transportation. And I didn't see the word CASA when I was reading about this, and yet I knew it jumped right out at me. This is CASA.
That is CASA, and that's Scott Wiener's bill. And he had a bill last year, 827, that did not pass. Ultimately out of the Senate, but yesterday he had a bill, SB 50, his new bill, that's revised somewhat, that did pass out of committee. There is another competing bill by Senator McGuire, I think SB 4. Ultimately, I believe those two bills will merge and become one. There'll be some negotiations back and forth about what that should look like. But again, that's what we're talking about, is really addressing those issues. And, you know, I get it from the local perspective about whether or not you want to maintain that local control. At the same time, what we have been doing is just not been working. And it's hard to really get over that. So what can we do differently? And I think as long as we all work together to better the situation, that we can.
Okay. Now, at the Latino Lo Cien luncheon, which was very interesting, and we have a group of mothers that we sometimes talk to from Roseland, and some of them came up with some questions. And it seemed to me, for example, that they're not always knowledgeable about some of the programs that are actually out there. I remember the first home that I bought. I wasn't a veteran, but there was a housing program that I could, as a first-time buyer, hook into. And some of the Latino residents, especially it seemed, in our communities, are not being made aware of these programs. Do they still exist? And are they still out there for people, first-time home buyers and people who need a little extra help?
I believe some of them are, certainly. You know, there was, after the housing crisis, there was a big swing, and it was part of the problem, I think, that we experienced was the pendulum swinged from one extreme probably to the other. And certainly banks became fearful after 2008 about what they were going to lend on, and you saw just a tightening of credit overall. You saw a tightening of programs because people were concerned, the government was concerned about what was happening. Obviously, a huge recession, a nation in the midst of a huge recession led by a lot of the housing bubble, certainly in our area. So those things are starting to make a comeback. The problem is in government these days, especially at the local level, state level for that matter, to some degree, although they have a larger surplus these days, there's never enough resources, and there's the programs have kind of tightened up, fallen off the wayside. Governor Newsom, though, is committed through $750 million to really go down this path of providing more options for housing, a lot of it towards the lower income folks who are most stressed on the housing stability.
Excellent. Now, Noemi Palomino Andrade had asked a specific question. There should be a list of low-income apartment rentals that single mothers particularly can qualify for so they don't have to spend a lot of time in shelters. Are there such programs on a county basis where a low-income single mother, for example, or someone who doesn't have a two-income household can qualify particularly so that they can get out of shelters if the family is homeless?
Yes. Short answer is yes, in terms of the income. The household income obviously is a determinant about where you are on the list. The problem is there's a list. And again, it goes back to the housing crisis, that we don't have enough housing at all levels of affordability, especially at the lower ends. And that's just a huge issue. I know the cities have, and the counties for that matter, who have had redevelopment use 20% of the monies to build and invest in low-cost housing or affordable housing. And that's gone away. So it's made it, you know, relying on tax credits, we're going a little slower in that genre. And that's a problem. You know, here at the county, we have our Community Development Commission. They maintain a list. You do have to actively get yourself in there and get on that list. I know that it's going through some revisions about how we keep that, how it's administered, to make sure that we're compliant with fair housing regulations as well.
Okay, tell me now a little bit about, you also had a question about inspections. Are inspections required before someone moves into an apartment, while they're in the apartment, only if they complain? And does the county and city work together on inspections of rental housing?
That's a good question. Inspections, I think, are only required when on the affordability side. I believe when a unit becomes, say, a Section 8 qualified residence or apartment, there'll be an inspection made at that point in time to make sure that what the land owner was communicating is true, how big the house is and what condition it is in. After that, like all housing, there aren't really follow-up inspections unless there's an issue. And of course, it varies by who's managing the units, and that's true whether it's a nonprofit landlord, a housing corporation, or a for-profit corporation. We do have mechanisms within the county. We utilize legal aid a lot to make sure that there's representation if it gets to the point where that is needed. It's unfortunate we have to go that far. There's certainly code enforcement both in cities and county. We do try to, you know, we at the county concentrate on making sure that we go after the most egregious conditions first. But there's not a overall program of inspections right now. There really never has been as far as I know.
Would you support such a plan? It seems to me, coming from a jurisdiction in Maryland, where an annual inspection, maybe it didn't take a long time, but an inspector simply walked through the apartment to make sure that nothing had happened since the last time. And also what this does would be, if someone complains, sometimes this sets in motion a situation where the landlord says, oh, there's gas leaking, he takes out the stove, we had a video about this, and then all of a sudden the next day he comes and says, well, this place is uninhabitable, you don't have the stove, so you're evicted.
Yeah, no, I think for sure I believe that the board would be interested in making sure that we're doing all things prudent to make sure there's safe housing. I think that's always balanced by if we do have one of those programs, who's going to pay for it and what's the ramifications of that? If the program becomes so big that you're actually going to not house a family or two or three because of the expense of the program, are we money ahead on that? And part of it, I think, goes to your point exactly, and what the county has been trying to do is to go after those that are the most egregious, and know that there are people that are good landlords that are doing the right thing, and give them the benefit of the doubt, rather than inspect every property, which there's a lot of property. So you can imagine the amount of inspections, which translates, of course, into a cost, which someone has to pay for, hopefully not the tenant, and the county doesn't necessarily have a source of funding for that that wouldn't take away from providing housing for someone else. So it's kind of a catch-22.
Interesting. One of the things that I learned in the course of my research, that some of what we need to do in housing is because there was not a level playing field. 30, 40, 50 years ago, the idea of redlining, the idea of keeping people of color out of housing, which was happening here in Sonoma County as well as all over the United States. Do you believe that there is a residual element of the kind of racism that had happened here in the county decades ago, certainly before you began your public service? And do we need, I don't want to use the word reparations, but do we need particularly to look at people of color in housing and say, we stopped these people from getting housing at a certain time in our history, and we need to remediate that?
You know, I think we've come a long, long way, and we are much better as a society overall, but I'm not naive enough to say that we don't have problems still. Now, obviously, I think every day you'll see an example of some heinous racism, and certainly we're paying the price of many things from the past that we're still trying to have a path forward that eliminates that discrimination as much as possible, provides enough opportunity for folks. I do think the strongest towns, the strongest communities, the strongest neighborhoods we have are those that are diverse. I will say my hometown of Petaluma, I think, is one of those. If you look at the portrait of Sonoma, one of my complaints about that in terms of investing in the community, that it really was not granular enough. So that if you're a diverse community where there are different income levels living side by side, it doesn't show up on that particular report as a problem area. But yet those people still need the same programs, offer the same programs that those in a concentrated area were, you know, obviously there's a bigger need because of that, but we don't want people to kind of fall by the wayside. And I do think that communities that are diverse, that people are living side by side, ultimately that's the way we really combat true discrimination, is to understand one another on a human level instead of just generalizing and, pointing fingers across the town at someone else.
Okay, a couple of more things. There was Salvador Sanchez Strawbridge, who I know you know, had a question about gentrification in Roseland. And I know Roseland is now part of the city, not part of the county specifically as it was before, although it's still obviously part of the county if it's part of the city. What kinds of things do developers think about and politicians think about when they improve a neighborhood and they do it for the residents of that neighborhood, and then there comes a switch, a flip, and all of a sudden that neighborhood becomes unaffordable for the people who invested their lives in that neighborhood?
Yeah, boy, this is kind of akin to solving homelessness, for that matter. I mean, this has been an issue from the very first Plan Bay Area when we started talking housing and gentrification and displacement. And how do you actually combat that is really a difficult thing. And if you property that is privately owned in a neighborhood that improves over time, the value of the property increases, which usually means obviously if you buy it, the mortgages are going to increase, or you rent it, the rents are going to increase, the reinvestment in the community, which is a good thing. But at the same time, there are going to be those that are going to be priced out of the market and displaced. It's been happening from day one in this nation in the way that we go about our housing. I think the way that we can truly combat it these days is to make sure that we do increase our deed-restricted affordable housing options so that we can keep that mix. I think...
Yeah, to explain to me, what does that mean, deed-restricted affordable housing?
That's truly that you're where there's a either a tax credit at the state and federal level, like a Burbank Housing Corporation, for instance, that is really everyone within one of their units is going to be qualified for a certain level of income, whether it's low, you know, different levels, low, medium, moderate, and so on and so forth. But I think on the market side, it's also a matter of housing is expensive. Construction these days is very expensive, but affordability by design. You know, no longer, I think, are we really going to be building sprawling suburbs with 2 and 3 car garages and 5 bedrooms. There'll still always be a need, or someone will want that somewhere, but fewer and fewer. And more diverse options on the housing stock, I think, give more options for people, especially as they move from one housing level to another, even from micro units, the small house, a single person in a very small studio, to graduating then, you know, going down life chain of perhaps a marriage and children and what that's going to lead to. But having those options along the way, we used to be that we didn't have as many housing type options. So I think that's one thing that we can do going forward. And the market, that's a kind of a market-driven solution that hopefully will play out over the long haul. But it's still going to be an expense.
Okay. Now, if we had been able to keep you on the broadcast at the very end to hear from John Deloso, came up from Cotati. I had a long conversation with Teresa Barrett of your town, Petaluma. And let's imagine they're in the room with you today and you're trying to sell some of these points of CASA that they're a little wary about, the local control, the one size fits all. How do you get them on board to get these solutions going? And I see you're smiling, I'll tell the radio listener.
I'm smiling because we've had great conversations, and I very much appreciate all my colleagues and where they're coming from. And, you know, part of it is change is hard, and that, just say that in general. Land use decisions, building in someone's neighborhood is usually a very emotional thing, so it becomes politically a hot potato. But I do think that what's going to come out of Sacramento will push our comfort level a little bit, and I think that's okay. Because, again, what we've been doing and the system that we have in place just keeps ratcheting up costs and doesn't really address the issues in front of us. And I think we all play a role in that. And what I've been trying to communicate is that cities do play a role, and counties, jurisdictions, by charging development fees that are go up and up each year. That's all added into the overall cost. It makes the housing more expensive. It's needed. I understand to operate the cities, but we really need to look at those costs. And if the housing is more important than the development fees in the bank, then we need to make those political decisions about what is the most important thing for us. Are we trying to solve a housing crisis, or are we really trying to put money in the bank to operate the city? You can do both. I believe that you can do both, but I think it takes some little investigation and understand the consequences of all these decisions on the ultimate cost of whether it's a rental unit or whether it's a home for sale, or how you get your affordable housing built, the inclusionary rates that we talked about. It's wonderful. And that's the rate of affordable housing units within a overall development. If you set it too high and it doesn't, quote unquote, pencil out for the developer, it'll never get built. And so it's important to look at that rationally and try to push for a number that maybe puts the developer out of their comfort level, but doesn't make them walk away. And there's a fine line in a lot of these things, and I think that we really need to understand the economics of development a little better, both on the private and public side, and understand that we all play a role in it. And I think that's really the what CASA was really trying to point out.
All right. Finally, you say CASA is sort of over, you've done your job. Are you guys planning to, men, women, planning to get back together at all and say, okay, this is what we learned? Is there a learning going on there, or has it, as you've implied, kind of been cut and now it's done?
Well, I think the learning will be, as we continue to move forward, we'll always be required to do a new Plan Bay Area. We're required to have that sustainable community strategy going forward. That's state law from 2008. And we're in our third reiteration of that. And that'll always track how we do on the housing levels. So we hope that what comes out of Sacramento this legislative season will make an impact on providing affordable housing, housing affordability for people within the Bay Area. We hope that the trajectory of home prices going up exponentially each and every year will soften, and so that we can actually attract folks to come and live and be able to live in communities and not commute from the Central Valley. I think, you know, that's what we're going to see. It's going to take a while. Certainly, building new housing takes a while, and having that kind of work within the economy is going to take a while to see how it shapes out. But we do think that some of these issues need to be addressed. They need to be addressed sooner than later. Certainly some of the rental protections. Again, those are going to be isolated in small areas. There's no panacea. And that's why there was 10 different elements. And it really, hopefully, if we can get as many of those through legislation in Sacramento, I think that'll really give us a fighting chance to make a difference in providing housing throughout the Bay Area.
Okay, David Rabbit, chair of the Sonoma County Board of Supervisors, president of ABAG, and member of the MTC. Thanks a lot for spending a little extra time with me today.
No, thank you. I appreciate it very much.